As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Premier League. We look at the delights in store as the top division returns from the Merseyside derby. Should that be Merseyside derby? To Nottingham Forest Luton, the game, not the Robin Hood memoir. Also today, Chelsea Arsenal, great expectations, and England playing well against better opponents in every sense. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Thursday, the 19th of October. Don't know how that happened, listener, but here we are. I say we. Got Benji Lagnado in today.
Hey.
It's a lovely,
hello, Jimbo.
Lovely t-shirt you're wearing, Benji.
Oh, thanks. It's just celebrating pickfair.com for all your photography storefront needs.
Boom. Also with us, Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
Woo. And Charlie Eccleshare.
Hello.
Charlie has just returned with Football Cliches. Now at a new home, of course, Charlie.
This is true, yeah. First week this week. Very exciting.
Congrats. Wow, congrats. It's very exciting.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Oh, since we last spoke, England qualified for next year's Euros. Woo. Benji, nice to see Scamacca score a goal in London. Banter.
Oh, it was just written, wasn't it? He entered into the pantheon of ex-West Ham strikers scoring decisive goals for Italy. Do you remember the last one? Diamanti, who scored was that 2012, the Hodgson World Cup.
What a player, by the way.
I really loved Alessandro Diamanti. And yeah, Scamacca could have been kind of that
range. Maybe he will,
range.
He's only on loan, isn't he?
No, sold him.
They sold him.
He's gone, Atalanta, I think, yeah. Mm. I mean, it's typical, what, 15 games for Italy's first goal was back at Wembley.
Good goal, though.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah.
Just not really Premier League.
I mean, there was Allaire as well, wasn't there, who... make it at West Ham, but then...
They're very comparable because they're both, I think, very good players, will go on to be fantastic, but they're not Premier League players. Anyway.
What did you say? Interesting. You don't think it's a West Ham issue? You think that's a Premier League issue?
I'm sure we shoulder part of the blame. but with Scamacca, it's just... I mean, this is quite sort of esoteric, but with Scamacca, he is a much broader player than someone like, say, Mikel Antonio. No, kind of the inverse, actually. He's much skinnier. But he's quite expansive with his play. He drops deep. He's like a sort of like worse Italian version of Harry Kane. He likes
you
to build up
play. You make him sound overqualified for the Premier League.
That's sort of what I'm saying.
overqualified for Moisey.
Overqualified for West Ham. We are like...
Right, well, that's what I was really wondering about. But fascinating. I tell you what, we might touch on England, Italy later on, and some of the other players who look good. Some of the players in England shirts.
Scamacca didn't put it about enough. That's what I'm going to say for a Moyes team. Put it about enough. Like, look at someone like Mikel Antonio, you get a lot more than just like being a striker out of him.
Right. I mean, he started his career at West Ham with a very troubled interview, I seem to recall. Yeah. So that put him on a bad foot.
Yeah. The Albatross. Who interviewed the Italy manager before that game? Same man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looked quite rainy outside during that interview.
I'm not sure if you've been outside this week, Duncan, but unprecedented levels of rainfall.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll touch on all those issues and more later on. But today we're mostly about the Premier League. Woo! You excited, Charlie?
I really am, yeah.
Yeah. Huge matches this weekend.
Have missed it.
Yeah. We've got Merseyside Derby. That's the first game back. Saturday lunchtime.
Of course. Liverpool, 12:30 after an international.
Five games at 3 o'clock. Nice. Man City taking on Brighton, which would be arguably the pick of the 3 o'clock ones if you could watch any of them, even though you're spending about, what, £100 a month for your subscriptions. The others, by the way, are Bournemouth Wolves, Brentford Burnley, Newcastle Crystal Palace, and Nottingham Forest against Luton at 5:30 on Saturday. You've got another derby. It's Chelsea Arsenal. And then at 8, rather curiously, Sheffield United, Man United. One game and one game alone on Sunday. You don't need any other action, really, when it's Villa-West Ham, the annual David Cameron Confusion Classico. And on Monday, the round finishes with Spurs-Fulham. Let's have a quick look at the table from Opta, because it's been a while. Let's see. Man City, as you will recall, are top. Newcastle are second. Arsenal and Chelsea rounding out the top four before the lads from Merseyside in fifth place. Everton. Hang on. What devilry is this? Why? Why, I've only gone and picked up the Opta expected points table. That's right, listener, expected points.
Presumably that's what expected goals, it's goal difference of expected goals against expected goals against.
If you'd scored the goals that you were expected to score in that fixture, were the points you would have got from that?
Oh, it's specifically from those games. Okay.
And Everton, if they'd scored the so on, would be fifth in the table as opposed to, checks notes, 16th.
But, big caveat, they have statistically had the easiest start to the season, Everton. So
Everton?
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. They are the biggest
under... If only there was an actual table we could look at that was sort of...
There is. We don't look at it till 10 games, I've been told. Yeah, that's... So 2 weeks to go, and then we can actually look and see what's going on.
That would be so interesting to see that big reveal.
Yeah. I'm just going to spoil it all by saying that in the actual table, Spurs and Arsenal are on 20 points.
Are they?
Yeah. Man City are third on 18... Liverpool have broke back into the top four. They're on 17 points, and a point behind them are Villa and Brighton on 16. So the whole top six within 4 points of each other. Very exciting. Mm. Just on that, I mean, I was a bit intrigued by that expected points table. Also because they've been very kind. They've drawn little lines to show the gap between where you are and where they say you should be. And no one is further away than where they should be than Everton in terms of underperforming, although Chelsea on the Opta expected points table should be fourth. They're currently 11th.
I think all of this makes sense. It's basically
teams that
are playing better than
creating a lot of chances.
Their results,
but the flip side to it is the biggest overperformers are Tottenham Hotspur, who should be seventh, and a little team called West Ham United, who should actually be 14th.
Really, that's why you can stick your XG up your arse.
Exactly.
But there is a thing. I mean, you can overperform for a whole season, right? So it's not like it's this will come crashing down. It might, but a team like City, or I think Arsenal last season, overperform their XG quite a lot.
Also, I think
if you've got elite finishers, that's kind of what they do. Like if you have an Erling Haaland, he might outperform it over a long period. Son Heung-min's had years and years massively overperforming his XG.
Mm.
Is that right? And also, luck is an absolutely normal part of winning stuff. Yeah. Like if you are scoring more goals than your performances suggest, there's a bit of luck involved there, and that's often what happens when
people, because football's so low scoring, people forget just how much luck is important.
Huge.
In football. Like you look at when Manchester United won the treble.
Sorry, I have to back you up there, Duncan. You can't just throw the word luck out there. I mean, there's so many components in there.
No, but I would say outperforming your XG is the definition of luck, isn't it? Yeah.
No, it's not
always, but
there is no
be.
Luck.
There's loads of luck.
For example, I mean, luck is the thing that people talk about when somebody hits the crossbar instead of going a couple of inches lower.
Mm. But that's not luck. XG I see your point.
Things that are just too complex for people to kind of break down and put on a graph.
But XG is attempting to do that.
For anyone who's recently watched the David Beckham documentary, United won the, spoiler, they won the treble in 99.
I was watching my wife, she literally didn't know. So it was amazing to watch it with her last night. We watched that.
She was like, Bayern got this in the bag.
She was like, did United win this? I was like, what do you wait and see?
People are on a certain Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
What gave it away to her that she was already had an inkling that...
I think she didn't know. She genuinely didn't know either way, but they get to that game and it's kind of like the big finale.
Right.
And she was just... She reads ahead in books, which I find extraordinary.
What?
But apparently some people do this. They'll read... Yeah.
Self-spoil?
Yeah.
I know people that do it. It's ridiculous.
It's so weird. Yeah. So she was just trying to do that, basically. Because you wanted to... I was like, wait and see.
So you can appreciate the moment when it happens more, or...
I think
have
it's just impatience.
Read the final chapter of a book?
No.
Do you do that? You're one of the weirdos.
I don't do it now, but when I was a kid, I did.
Really? I just think it's like, you can't. It's like there's this force field preventing you from doing it.
I did do it for some books when I was a kid.
I guess...
Oh, definitely when I was a student.
Is it so you can show... Yeah, fine. But is it so you can sort of like show off that you know the ending?
No.
Or be like, this is so predictable.
What's the reason?
To yourself.
I guess I just couldn't wait.
Couldn't resist.
I know where this is going. Because I read the end.
Maybe 7-year-old Jimbo or something.
Fine.
The treble, each element of the treble could have easily gone wrong. And, you know, the Bergkamp penalty, the European Cup final, even the final
league
game.
Is that not where you trot the argument out, but over the course of a season... There isn't luck because it evens itself out, and that's what a league. I mean, certainly in a league situation, you might say yes. In a cup, you can get a bit
there was
lucky.
There was a Twitter thing a few months ago. Someone said, "Do you think the final position of the Premier League table? Let's say the team that comes first was the best team. The team that comes second was the second best team, and so on."
No,
that's not the case.
No.
Exactly. So luck comes into it.
Why is that not the case? I mean, it empirically is the case.
Well, no, it's not.
It kind of is.
Too good to go down. Too
well, no,
good
that's
to finish
your evaluation, but what the numbers have shown is that your evaluation, your gut feeling was.
But that's
wrong.
I'm with Duncan. West Ham got relegated with 42 points.
Yeah, of course.
That's bad luck.
Yeah,
it's not bad luck.
I think that's less so because you know what you're up against. Like I always find when people say things like they would have won the league in any other season with this amount of points. It's like, yeah, but it's a race. You know, you know what you're up against.
I accept that that's a weak argument. It's the same maybe with like Leicester winning the league because everyone else had a shocking season. Like that was fortunate circumstances. Going back to the original thing on XG, for what I understood, XG is like the guy's in this position, the goalkeeper's in this position. What is the statistical likelihood that this goes in? And I think I'm arguing against myself here. If they then score. Yeah, they're outperforming the expectation. All right, I'm going to end this debate on the opposite end of where I started it.
So in conclusion, luck's really important.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, there's no derby, anyone? Well, there's two big derbies this weekend. One feels a bit more dramatic than the other, and it's not Liverpool-Everton. Because how good actually is the Merseyside derby?
On the raw numbers, it's got the most red cards of any fixture in the Premier League. It's got the most 90th minute winning goals of any fixture. Also good. But I do sort of think... I think there's some derbies that are good wherever they're played. I think the Merseyside derby is generally good at Goodison Park. Mm. It feels like that's the one. Whereas at Anfield, it tends to either be fairly comfortable for Liverpool or just quite a dreary game.
Mm.
Let's hope not this weekend, although it is at the 12:30... gloom slot, as it's known.
I think it could be interesting. I think Everton, I want to go back to it. We talked about how they were underperforming their XG quite significantly, Everton. They have looked quite good at times this season. In the last game, it sort of all came together. And their forward line was the forward line they probably hoped they'd have at the beginning of the season, but didn't have any of them. So Calvert-Lewin with Dwight McNeil and Jack Harrison either side, like, that's a decent Premier League strike force. You've got Onana and Doucouré in the engine room behind. Tarkowski's a proven Premier League centre-back. Branthwaite, I think, is really good. Yeah. But that's a good side. And they've been better away from home than at home so far, Everton. So I think there could be something in this.
Liverpool's back line already besieged or beset with absences, losing Andy Robertson and all this fixture. Mm.
And certain elements of social media have spotted that the VAR operative... is David Coote. The last time he did a Merseyside derby was the Van Dijk Pickford ACL mega clash.
I feel like he's always the VAR, David Coote.
He's a classic VAR
far
man.
More, I think of him far more as a VAR than natural VAR.
Legacy VAR.
Yeah, exactly. Real heritage with David Coote. I feel like Everton are kind of the worst team to play after an international break, and this I have no idea if stats back this up, but just I don't imagine they've got loads of internationals, certainly relative to a team like Liverpool. You can just picture Daishi working them extremely hard over these 2 weeks. It's more chance Calvert-Lewin will be fit because he hasn't played for a couple of weeks. I don't know. I think Everton is not a team I'd be that up for playing straight after internationals.
Although traditionally there's very little jeopardy for Liverpool with this game. They've lost one of the last 25 Merseyside derbies.
There is that. And I think that's why it's not like, say, the North London derby because there hasn't been that sort of nip and tuck. It's been so one-sided, which does take a bit of the edge away.
All right. Well, anyway, it's the first game after 2 weeks, so I'm sure we'll all tune in. Later that day, then, you also get the other cross-town affair, this time in London, Chelsea-Arsenal, first ever managerial meeting of Mauricio Pochettino and Mikel Arteta, curiously enough. Are Chelsea coming good? Three straight wins, That table suggests they should be. Their performances should have them up in fourth place. And is it now beginning to coalesce on the field as well?
I mean, people that predicted they'd come second are pleased to see them slowly improve. I mean, the underlying numbers, are really good. Chelsea and Arsenal both, weirdly, have conceded exactly the same amount of open play XG, 5.16. So Chelsea are better than the league table suggests. But this is going to be their toughest test so far.
I mean, what those numbers tell you about Chelsea, obviously, is they've missed a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. And so I think, very basic, but it will come down to, you know, can they put some of these away? And they may not get as many against an Arsenal defence that haven't conceded away from home in the league yet this season.
True.
So yeah, I think it's going to come down to that. They're good enough. They'll create a few. Can they stick them away? And then on the other side, I guess Arsenal, same question. It's possible this will be the first time they're able to start Jesus, Saka, Martinelli. Saka, we don't yet know. We'll find out, or probably won't find out, because it's Mikel Arteta tomorrow. There might be some sort of weird deception going on. But yeah, I think those three have only played like 12 minutes or something in that United game.
I think if you're Gareth Southgate, you're a bit pissed off if Saka starts. I always find that a little bit like, well,
wouldn't it have given him a selection headache, Benji?
Yeah, maybe, but like he's still the first choice.
He has played about a million games in a row.
No, I know, but if you report for England, go home because you're injured, and then start for your club in the next game.
I think he not missed the City game, then yes, you'd be annoyed with that, but fair he did point. Already miss
yeah,
that
yeah,
game.
And that's a massive game, to be fair. Yeah, you're right.
Arsenal won 6 of the last 7 meetings with Chelsea in all competitions. The expected narrative on this one, I'm going to say, is high, because you've got Kai Havertz returning to the Bridge. You've also got potentially a huge game for your Declan Rices and your Eddie Nketiahs, because they both played for the same Chelsea boys team and were both released by that Chelsea boys team on the same day at the age of 14. Can you imagine their little hearts, how broken they were? And now they've got the chance to go back there to Stamford Bridge and ram that right back down Chelsea's throats.
Nketiah scored a couple at Stamford Bridge for Arsenal couple of seasons ago as well, so he has history in doing that.
How big is this game for Arsenal beyond the table and them being there level going into the round with Spurs on points? How big is the Chelsea derby?
Well, it's big in the sense that for a long time, so Arsenal had this crazily good record. They didn't lose against Chelsea in the league from 95 till 2005. But then it completely flipped.
It's a bellwether fixture, isn't it, for London?
It is. Yeah, it is a bit. I mean, and then Chelsea completely had the upper hand, and you think of Drogba just like flicking away Arsenal defenders and scoring.
Diego Costa
then sort of took up that mantle. I mean, it really was Mourinho kind of bullying Wenger. It was that period. And then it was sort of a bit more up and down, but then it's flipped back to Arsenal dominating the fixture and finishing above them last season, which has been very rare since Abramovich came in.
I remember being at this game. It was Wenger's 1,000th game in charge of Arsenal.
6-0.
And it was 6-0. And the whole of the Chelsea fans were singing, "Arsene Wenger, we want you to stay."
Yeah.
Which was a tough moment for the red section.
I feel like Chelsea might have been the opponent that hurt Wenger and that Arsenal team the most. They felt so much just like the stronger, big bully brother that Arsenal and Wenger just could not cope with.
How the tables are turned. By the way, bellwether, do you know where that phrase comes from?
No. Must be nautical something.
Well, I thought maybe it was a kind of a bell that would announce that the weather was changing. That would make sense. But it's actually not. The term derives from Middle English, bellwether.
All right, Beowulf.
which referred to the practice of placing a bell around the neck of the lead weather, the male sheep. Shepherd could then note the movement of the animals by hearing the bell. So it's nothing to do with weather, it's a trend. No, I know that the sheep are moving. It might be dark, it might be the gloaming.
And that's
an indicator of the fact that
it's an early sign of where the sheep are.
Yeah.
The direction that
the herd, the flock.
Flock.
Yeah.
Or headed, yeah, makes sense.
Boom.
Thanks, James.
No, not at all. I was curious.
That is interesting.
Because
I always think of it with their weather states is kind of where it
in elections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, they're like sheep with that bell around their necks. Man City are facing Brighton in that kind of TV limbo of Saturday mid-afternoon. Remember, City have lost their last 3 games in domestic competition. Can Brighton, to finish off this part, can Brighton make it 4 in a row?
Well, Rodri's back, which, yeah, those things are not coincidental. They've lost those three without him. So with him back, I would expect City to probably win, and they are in this insane home record.
Yeah.
Is it 21 in a row?
Well, they've done 20.
And they've won 20.
And if they do Brighton, that will be a new record in the Premier League era.
Mm.
Probably people didn't even make notes of home wins in a row before.
They didn't even understand what a home game was. Just listen out
too
for sheep.
Telling. Yeah. Oh, Brighton themselves, to add, you know, fuel to your argument. No wins in four before the break. None. They lost to Chelsea and then Villa. And then they drew with Marseille and Liverpool. Although I guess they showed a certain amount of character in both those ties.
I mean, it's also something with Brighton that, you know, De Zerbi's been there for more than a year. And their average, there are around four goals in their games. I mean, that is incredible entertainment.
They've conceded more goals than Luton.
Brighton. Yeah.
This season.
Yeah. Liam Tharm of The Athletic has obviously invested as a Brighton fan, but he's written a piece this week comparing Guardiola and De Zerbi. And there's a slight Brighton concern about just how open and porous they are. It's not, you know, because there's obviously been talk of De Zerbi being one of the candidates to replace Guardiola when he eventually leaves. And, you know, City have become an incredibly good defensive team. And Brighton, as Benji points out, probably one of the weakest defensive teams in the league. Now, that's sort of okay because De Zerbi's policy is we'll just score more than the opposition. But you don't win much doing that.
I mean, that's partly because of his tactics, but it's also partly fruit of selling players like Caicedo off, which wasn't, I imagine, his tactical decision.
True, but it did happen a bit last season as well.
Yeah. That is a good point, though. Yeah, you're right. City aren't selling off, having to regenerate constantly.
Right. Pep himself described Zerbi as one of the most influential coaches of the last 20 years. But then Pep does stuff like that.
Very Pep, isn't it?
So good.
Erling Haaland has had one shot in his last two Premier League matches. He didn't score, of course, for Norway in their crucial Euro qualifier.
So there's been a few weird things with Haaland recently.
Yeah.
And these might be isolated incidents or a chain of events. Do you remember, like, so the City game where Saliba just like bounced him onto the floor? Like, that's like not your classic imperious Haaland challenge. Did you see the picture of Haaland with the 7'6" Senegalese basketball player? Have you seen this? This is after, I think, a Champions League game, and there's this gigantic basketball player in the change room after the game. And first of all, obviously, he makes Haaland look tiny. But that was not the thing that drew my eye. It was the fact that Haaland was topless.
Jesus.
But, okay, James, look at Haaland's stomach. It's completely flat.
Well, it looks like he's sucking in his concave.
But listen, you know, the hallmark of the modern professional footballer is like extraordinary core strength. You know, there's been a lot of talk about arses in the previous week with Eden Hazard retiring, you know, McGinn's the current flag bearer. Like, and if it's not your arse, it's your six pack. And basically,
I think he's leaning it. That looks like he's leaning it. He's breathing in.
I think Haaland's. I think his dad, who makes him a lasagna before every game,
right,
has changed the recipe.
I think so.
And he's lost strength. He's getting bullied by Saliba. Until he sorts that lasagna out, I don't think Haaland's ever going to score again.
My Bechamel Hell by Erling Haaland. The other thing with Haaland, and this possibly only interests me and the entire country, but he's on 44 goals in the Premier League overall. Mm. He's on 9 offsides. Now, I want him to reach 50 goals before ever reaching double figures for offsides, because that is pretty unusual for a centre forward.
Is that unusual? What's the sort of normal ratio?
It depends on the style of play. Obviously, a Pippo Inzaghi would be...
Sure,
you know,
born offside.
Yeah.
An Alvaro Morata, what would he be?
Just thousands. But it is, I mean, even on, you know, bigger centre-forwards will get caught offside less, but this is, like, unusual.
I guess those City, it's quite hard to be caught offside against, because the defences they're up against must
against
be so
them,
deep.
Yeah, but it is just, you know...
Good point.
Bizarre. He's never offside. Well, 9 times.
Okay. But, I mean, clearly there's not an issue with him, lasagna notwithstanding, because he's Erling Haaland and he will finish the season with probably 30-odd goals.
One,
but
probably.
I saw somewhere someone had put Erling Haaland's lost his scoring touch. He's got 8 goals in 8 games. I mean...
Another vaguely relevant curio from this game. So, Rashford in the week, by scoring against Italy, he moved into third in the list of goal scorers among currently playing England players. So you've obviously got Kane on 60-odd. Two is
Sterling,
correct. Three is now Rashford. He's on 17 goals. Who did he leapfrog? It's relevant to this game. Who did he leapfrog on 16 goals?
James Milner?
Nope. Currently, he's not currently in the England squad, but he's English and currently playing.
And he plays for either Brighton or City.
This blew my mind.
Danny Welbeck.
It's Danny Welbeck.
Wow, yeah.
Danny Welbeck scored 16 goals.
He did score quite a few.
I can remember one of them. Like the Sweden.
The one against Sweden, yeah.
But name another Danny Welbeck goal for
away at, was it Switzerland?
It's not easy, is it?
2014 at the start of that Euros qualification campaign.
He scored like 16 goals for England. I mean, pretty amazing.
The England YouTube channel has got Danny Welbeck's top five goals, so you know that's fair play.
If number one isn't the Sweden goal, then
yeah, the Sweden goal isn't there. Yeah.
Oh, it will be. Just on the offside point as well, Duncan. I do think like Harry Kane. One thing I noticed from watching him closely is he was so rarely offside. And I do think like the very best are just so smart with their movement. Like whenever Harry Kane scores,
can't really judge offsides at Spurs, though, can you? So.
Well, yes, that is true. But yeah, whenever he scored, I wouldn't have the same VAR anxiety because I kind of just trust that he sort of knows. And I do wonder if Haaland has that same elite intelligence.
Is this going to be an absolutely terrific game, by the way?
It should be good. It's hard to see how it won't be a lot of fun, yeah.
And a lot of goals as well.
And a lot of goals, yeah.
Thank God we can't watch it.
I mean, they are saying their games average around 4 goals. I think this fixture was 3-1 last season to City, right. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that.
Well, the last time they took on Aston Villa, play a different kind of football. But the last time they went away to somebody was the trip to Villa when they shipped 6. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating weekend. All the title rivals involved in exciting fixtures, with the possible exception of Spurs' clash with Fulham, which you have to wait till Monday for. Fulham look like more comfortable opponents.
Spurs got a very odd week next week. They play Monday and Friday, which is very rare.
Really?
It's like big club, not in Europe at all, Claxon.
Intriguing. We'll touch on that game perhaps a little bit later on. But next up, how about we have a quick chat about events Tuesday at Wembley.
Football is bigger and more complicated than ever before. Just ask VAR.
Check complete. It's fine. Perfect. Yeah.
So the Daily Football Briefing is here to help, whether it's the World Cup.
It's a kind of face-saving. Everyone's happy. No one's a loser.
Lionel Messi.
As they say, he completed football.
Or Manchester United.
I mean, the performances all season have been questionable.
That are making you quizzical. The Daily Football Briefing has all the answers you need for every football story that matters, and it does exactly what the name suggests. It's daily, it's brief, and it's all about football. The Daily Football Briefing from The Athletic, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Che bastoni con Scalvini. Devono evitare Kane, che invece la meglio su entrambi, entra in rigore, Kane il tiro e la rete del 3-1.
Tuesday saw England facing Italy again at Wembley Stadium, a rematch, of course, of the Euro final from 2021. Couldn't have been a more different encounter, This time 3-1 to the Three Lions. So compared to that game 2021, what was the difference? Has Southgate evolved or was it simply Jude Bellingham?
I mean, I think that's a massive part of it. The thing that is, two things about Bellingham that maybe quite obvious, but I find so exciting, is that First of all, he is this like dynamic threat through the middle. Like England haven't actually had that for a long time. Maybe not since like Gerrard and Lampard. Like we have been a team that plays with two wingers and feeds Kane or Kane dropping deep. So to have like that double threat of Kane and Bellingham through the middle is something really new. And it also means the double pivot, two defensive midfielders, now makes sense because that always felt like a sort of solution looking for a problem. But if you're going to have, there were times in that game against Italy, we were playing essentially 4-2-4. And you can't really accuse Southgate of being cautious and defensive if you're playing 4-2-4. So yeah, I think this was very different to that Euro final because we were so aggressive and ambitious. And I think Bellingham demands that. So yeah, I think he's a huge part of the difference now.
Do you think England will continue to play a 4-2-4 or 4-2-3-1?
This is the team now. I think the team we saw, bar Saka instead of Foden, that will be our like prime starting lineup in the Euros. And I think you just sort of have to accept it now. Even the Calvin Phillips thing. I mean, I think you should play Conor Gallagher there instead of Phillips, which is probably a niche opinion. Mm. But ideally, if everyone is fit, you'd probably have Luke Shaw and Reece James, right?
I'd still go Kyle Walker.
You're probably right. So yeah, apart from the fullbacks, the rest of the team, I think, is now pretty much set.
Remarkable.
I mean, it is a big change. If you think back to that final, England was still playing with three centre-backs and then two holding midfielders and Mason Mount as one of the front three, who's a kind, you know, he's a very intelligent, hard work. He's not the kind of outright threat that you get from like a Saka or Foden, someone like that. So it was a far more conservative team that England had back then.
I mean, I just can't remember a player coming through. I mean, I know everyone said about Bellingham, but like he's still only 20. He just is a leader, but he can play. He's like five players in one.
Well, it's funny, Gazzetta this morning, they do this big breakdown. You know the Da Vinci Vitruvian Man thing? Yeah, where you got the man spread out. And they have, and it's Bellingham, and they each of his limbs, and kind of they find a fifth one as well, but anyway. they point to like a characteristic of some great attacking midfield threat of the past. So they've got the speed with the ball, progressing with the ball of Kaká. They've got the feline threat of goal of Henri, who certainly in Italy was more of the attacking midfielder of reliability. They've got the strength and power of Rijkaard, the vision of Kevin De Bruyne, the dominance of Yaya Touré.
It's like the...
They just said Touré. I think it's Yaya they mean. Sorry.
Okay. It's like the former cartoon Brave Star. You know, strength of the bear, speed of the puma.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I do already think with him, I was thinking maybe Wayne Rooney, but in my lifetime, I can't remember a player playing for England and being this good for England and making me think
so much. Would you go back to Gazza?
He's a little... I guess at Euro 96, I saw Gazza.
Yeah, but he... Okay, so that was before you, but 1990 when Gazza came through. And holy cow, we've got a player like that.
But did... Yeah.
I can remember the build-up to the friendlies before World Cup 90. Mm. And Bobby Robson still wasn't sold on Gazza. He was 23 by this point, so it wasn't, you know... But he just dominated those games in the way, you know, came in and it was just, there was no way that England couldn't play him because he was just so vivacious and yeah, just good.
It was similar with super early Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, Rooney's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, when he came, he scored that
Turkey game as well. Yeah. I was like,
and he was still 17, I think, at the time.
Turkey game one, yeah. And then that Euro 2004, and had he stayed fit, obviously England might well have won it. But I can't remember that same feeling of... yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, a tournament like that, I think that is a really good example. Greece, were they the best team at that Euros? But I would still say they deserved it. They won it. But I do think England were unlucky with that injury. But I can't remember the feeling like with Bellingham of like, and call this jingoistic, whatever. I do feel like if he's fit, with this England team... I don't think it's crazy to say they should win the Euros.
There you go. Absolutely right. I agree.
He's just at that level.
But, I mean, having said that, there's an amazing France team.
There is.
Looking insane at the moment as well. And a lot of things can happen.
But to Benji's point a minute ago...
But they should certainly be considered real candidates.
Yeah. Bellingham's so good, you can no longer just concentrate on stopping the wide threat. You know, let's double mark your Rashford and Saka. You can't do that anymore, so they get more freedom. We saw that against Italy as well. Foden.
The one thing I would say is that Italy defence is anything but impenetrable.
It was subprime. But also subprime Italy defence. Who was it that Kane
held off?
Yeah.
Well, listen, that's kind of... someone was talking earlier about Kane's intelligence, but two things happened in that goal. Like, it was Kane being like characteristically clever and making the most of the fact, because, you know, Kane is not fast, and yet he ran from more or less the halfway line and beat the whole Italian defence. Who was the defender?
It was Bastoni, I think.
But
Poor old Bastoni was made to look pretty...
And he's actually a good player.
I know, he's all right, but he's not of the calibre of, you know, the last 20 years of Italian centre-backs. Kane is so smart that, like, that touch before the shot, it was like crystallizes how brilliant he is, because it's either I get a clean shot or it's a penalty.
Exactly. And even the way he put, because the Donnarumma guesses where he's going to put it, but he just gives it a little bit of height.
Yeah, it was such a good finish.
So smart.
Kane's such a big NFL fan. It was like someone running in and holding off someone.
Yeah,
quite reminiscent of that.
Yeah. I thought, by the way, Rashford, because that's one of the question marks, I guess, is Rashford versus Grealish on the left, right? And I think Rashford showed why it's kind of got to be him, I think, because I find Rashford really frustrating to watch. Like, he doesn't hug the touchline like Grealish does. He doesn't pass when he should do, like Grealish, you know, pepified Grealish now does. But he's just got a bit of that X factor where he can score, like, quite impressive goals and turn games. I mean, he did against Wales with the free kick.
Yeah.
I think he's probably shown that is his place, because Grealish doesn't do that. Grealish doesn't change games with goals.
Yeah, I think that is his position. I mean, the way
do this weekend, of course.
Could do.
England
doesn't score much, Grealish, though, really, does he?
No, not since...
Not since Pep's got hold of him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing with this England team, basically, there's been such a trend this summer for just, you know, dropping 100 million on central midfielders. If England, you know, you mentioned there Gallagher, there's Phillips, they don't have... If they had... that's the one thing they're missing, is another really, really good central midfielder to play alongside Rice. Or the other thing they could do, which they wouldn't do, but do what City, Arsenal do, is play Rice as a lone pivot and then have two eights. Or you could have Phil Foden, move him back.
But that, you just can't do that. That's the point now. Bellingham has got... he can just completely
just give him freedom to
own
whatever
that space.
He wants.
Do whatever you want. Don't share it with anybody. That is your space. Go and dominate it. We've got two lads behind you that are sorting out all the tricky stuff. And by the way, and as you say, like... it's very hard to justify that being Calvin Phillips, however good we think he is.
Mm.
I think, and Conor Gallagher is playing in that position for Chelsea, captaining them, playing really well. I think by the time we get to the summer, it should be him.
All right. Well, everyone's very excited about England's prospects in the summer, because they're doing brilliantly in qualifying. And there's never been a time before when they've done brilliantly in qualifying and then failed to do it at the tournament after. England have lost two of their last 72 World Cup or Euro qualifiers. Of course, under Southgate, for all the knocking he takes... tournament results, if not necessarily performance, the tournament results have been, you know, more reflective of the build-up that came before, as build-ups generally do. For Italy, meanwhile, problems. They have now slipped back to third in the group, 3 points behind Ukraine, their rivals for the second spot. They do still have a game in hand, though, Spalletti's side, and that's at home to, North Macedonia, gulp.
Knocked them out
of the playoff for the last World Cup, Italy will then face Ukraine in Leverkusen on the final match day, which is going to be an absolutely huge game, although the Azzurri will definitely have a playoff spot if they need it. It's just that Italy playoffs. Anyway,
there were moments where I thought Italy actually looked quite good, and you started to think, right, okay,
this
is looking
a
bit like a Spalletti side, actually.
As you say, early days for Spalletti, only his second set of internationals, but there were definite signs. They played bravely once they got over the first period there. They could have gone 2-0 up. I mean, yeah, there were positives, but they have to make sure that goes into the next
half his team on the naughty step because of their betting.
Well, we'll come on to that in a second.
Shenanigans, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, also going through to the Euros this week, along with England, Germany, Spain, Scotland, France, Turkey, Belgium, Portugal, were Ralf Rangnick's Austria. Well done. And meanwhile, Netherlands have wrested back control of their qualifying chances, courtesy of a 1-0 win against Greece. The goal coming in the 93rd minute. A penalty converted by Virgil van Dijk. Tuesday, did you see San Marino, Denmark? Did you? San Marino.
I saw the goal. Yeah. I saw San Marino goal, yeah. Oh. Fantastic.
That's them finally scoring a goal. That's their first of this qualifying campaign. The last nation to finally get on the score sheet. The sweeper, always good for a follow on the more niche footballing markets. Point out, it was 335 days since they previously managed to put a ball into a net. That was against St. Lucia. But in terms of competitive goals, it's 773 days since they'd scored a goal. Anyway, well done to them. They lost 2-1, but that's still probably one of their greatest results ever against Denmark, anyway. Speaking of internationals, meanwhile, World Cup qualifying going on over in South America. And Charlie, what happened to Brazil after their 1-1 home draw with Venezuela?
They lost 2-0.
To Uruguay.
To Uruguay, yeah. And Darwin Nunez scoring. But yeah, big story was Neymar has done his ACL. Real shame for him and for Brazil. And for his team and the whole Saudi league. I'm sure people will be devastated for them. But no, it's a real blow for him. And obviously there have been a lot of these ACL injuries over the last few months. And you hope he comes back strong. I mean, he has played so much football. I mean, by a young age, he just started so young and has been playing so consistently. He's had a lot of injuries. But yeah.
He's 31 years of age, Neymar. I don't know why I throw that in.
It's kind of hard to age Neymar, isn't it?
Mm.
31, yeah.
Get well soon, Neymar. Next up, let's round up the other Premier League action and also talk a little bit about that whole betting inquiry story that Benji was touching on.
Hello there, Io here. Listen to me on the Athletic Football Podcast, where we go deep on the biggest stories in the game, providing insights and analysis from the very best journalists in the business. You won't get this anywhere else. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. Just search the Athletic Football Podcast now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
So yeah, Italy lining up without Sandro Tonali on account of his inclusion in the ongoing inquiry into football players gambling on illicit online betting sites in Italy. You're not supposed to bet on your own sport. You're certainly not supposed to do it. The Italians get quite excited about this on illegal sites because they're worried about the crossover of organised crime and football is involved.
I thought it was just that it was not as they could do it. It's not as trackable as, say, like, you know, putting
well,
a
well, I'm sure
on
that's
Paddy
part of it. But if you go back not very far in Italian football, you do get players who get involved in this kind of stuff and then get tapped up to influence.
Okay,
results.
That makes sense. Because I thought they sounded incredibly tough and punitive about this. But if that's the context, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so there were three players who were initially named by this guy, Fabrizio Corona. He's the Pap, who's previously done time for blackmail and has now got this gossip site. And he brought out these names, which he got off the uncle of a former Inter youth player.
Wow.
And he says he's going to keep dropping them. But the first three out were Nicola Fagioli, who it turns out has got a real problem and had borrowed money off other players and agents and stuff for his gambling debts. And he's going to be receiving a 7-month ban because it wasn't on football and he kind of collaborated. Zaniolo, who maintains that he may have used sites, he's not sure, but only for playing poker, may well be coming out of this okay. We're not sure. But Corona has now named a bunch of other names as well, including Steven Ashrawi.
Who played
against England, who says this has got nothing to do with me. And yeah, he's not under investigation at the moment. Zalewski at Roma, Nicola Casali. There's a bunch of other names, and Corona says he's going to come out with, he's going to stop football, basically, is what he's pledged.
I mean, some people point out Newcastle, under their club statement on their website, underneath it has their sponsors. There's sportsbet.io, BetMGM, Fun88. It's just how, and we saw this with Ivan Toney as well, just how in bed with big betting companies football is. It's a big issue for the sport, and obviously we've seen with Toney, Antonelli now and others.
On the one hand, yes, we need to have a real look at how much money football is taking from betting companies and how they're ultimately promoting them. I think the footballer welfare issue is actually something different. You know, this is like very rich men with a lot of time on their hands, and they need to, they clearly need to be like seriously educated and as to, you know, what you should not be doing. They need people around them who are looking out for the signs of addiction. Paul Merson actually, I think, tweeted really well about this. He was saying, like, all right, you know, if we take Tonali at his word and he's got a real addiction, you can't just tell him to, you know, man up and get over it. This is something that we've got to really pay attention to. And so I think, yeah, there clearly is something there. But what I think will happen now is that we've got so many of these high-profile cases, and I think they will serve their purpose, even if they are scapegoating these players, to make everyone realise you just can't do it. You will get caught. And I think that if that comes out of all of this, I think it'll be a really good thing.
Yeah, but it also needs the clubs to be proactive about it as well, I think. I don't think the players themselves will necessarily just learn.
It's a welfare point, totally.
Yeah. And I guess that's where maybe people question, it's like, how committed are clubs to these things? And does it weaken your message when you are taking a huge amount of money from these companies? You're right, it's not saying you have to go and do it, but I just wonder if subconsciously or on some level, it weakens your message when you're saying, oh, you mustn't gamble, but you're saying this in front of a screen with huge gamble. But gambling's great. Yeah, just do it sort of in moderation, which is the message, but it's difficult.
All right. The other benefit of gambling bans, of course, is, or imminent gambling bans, is when, Benji, as you reference, you get to hang on to a player who probably would have done one over the summer.
Yeah, well,
do you want to talk about West Ham? Should we save that for the end and you could just go off on one?
Nah,
let me just race through the other fixtures on the way this weekend. You've got Gary O'Neill against the club that cruelly binned him off in the summer, Bournemouth Wolves, that is. Could be the game that sees Bournemouth deciding to end the Andoni Iraola experiment. Are there hints of that?
I don't know, but that would be, I'm sure Gary O'Neill would like that.
Woof.
Michael Cox, of course, argued that Gary O'Neill wasn't harshly dismissed by Bournemouth.
Okay. Sheffield United will be playing their first game at Bramall Lane since they went 8-0 down there to Newcastle a month ago. This time they're up against Man United. Hey, this is the fixture that produced the first ever Premier League goal.
It is indeed.
Who scored it?
Ryan Dean.
You
know.
He scored two in that game. Scored the first ever penalty as well.
Good Lord.
Schmeichel assisted Mark Hughes. So United's first Premier League goal in that game was assisted by the goalkeeper. But yeah, it's...
Different times then.
Very different times. I'm not sure anyone envisaged back in August 92 that you'd have to pay £1.3 billion to get 25% of the team that couldn't beat Sheffield United.
Right. What would 1.3... What was it? 1.3?
1.3 billion. I'm actually writing a piece this week just to explain...
Did you, Duncan?
Well, I haven't done it yet, but it will be out at the weekend.
So don't give anyone else the idea.
It's half done. It's fine. Yeah, 1.3 billion is a big number.
Yes.
I don't think people quite grasp how big that is. So... There's various, I'm not going to spoil the piece, but there's various comparisons in there, but it cost £12.50 to go to the game in 1992. Quite good. If you gave...
So you basically have gone, he's paying £1.3 billion for a quarter of Man United now, and Man United are playing in a game which in 1992 saw the first ever Premier League goal.
Mm.
The logical thing editorially would be to find out what would 1.3 have bought him back then.
Yeah,
Who commissioned that, Duncan?
Me.
Self-commissioned.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
I just like billions. But if you gave someone...
Is it adjusted for inflation?
Well, you'll have to wait and see, but okay. I've done both.
Can because you not give
it throws up some quite good stuff.
Everybody here, and I know you, listener as well, want to hear some mind-boggling comparison.
Well, if you gave someone £12.50, a.k.a. the match entrance fee...
Yes.
Every day for the rest of their life...
Yeah.
To reach 1.3 billion, you'd have to get to the 26th of March. From the 15th of August, 92, you'd have to get to the 26th of March, 396,251. I'm not sure how they would have named, how they say the years that far in the future, but I'm not sure whether the Premier League's still going.
That's a lot of years.
Yeah, but I'm sure the narrative's still running strong that year. Yeah.
When's that going to drop then?
Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
In the year 3000.
In the year 2023.
This is the first thing you've written this season, or no?
It's been a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things, but yeah.
So what happens? Do you just, you have an idea and you think, oh, this one's too juicy to give to anyone?
No, to be fair, someone else gave me this. Well, I suggested this idea, and then someone said, yeah, you should do that because it's, yeah.
Duncan Chapes.
Esoteric.
Esoteric. Lovely stuff. Nottingham Forest, Luton. Do you know when they last met each other in the top flight of the City Ground? Same season, Benji. It was...
No, it must have been the season before.
Oh, no, it's the season before. Mm. Absolutely right. Sorry, it was the same year.
Same year.
What, so it was January the 1st, 1992.
Mm. I fancy Luton in this game.
Mm. Oh, yeah?
Two interesting little player stats. In terms of key passes, after James Maddison and Bruno Fernandes, third on the list of key passes by midfielders is Alfie Doughty. He of the terrible, terrible haircut. I think that's the right. He's their left winger, right? And he's got he's got one of those mullets that where basically he's just got a normal haircut and he's just taken out like a kind of 10 centimeter circumference around the sideburn.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, EFL that.
Yeah, yeah. But he's
very quite, Australian.
Quite very Aussie.
COVID era haircut as well.
Yeah. And it's just, anyway, he's clearly playing well. And
he was very good against Spurs, I have to say.
In terms of most tackles by any midfielder in the league is Marvellous Nakamba. So, like, their players are putting in a shift. And we sort of talked about it earlier. They're not conceding many, apart from the opening fixtures when they got walloped. They haven't been walloped since. You know?
And no one believes this when you tell them, but they're not in the bottom three. right now. They're fourth bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
They won away at Everton, didn't they? In their last
away game. Good set pieces. I think... They are going to stay up.
And I actually agree with you.
Do you really?
I think because they're more pragmatic than, say, like a Burnley.
Where are they on the expected points table?
Even higher, I think.
Are they?
There you go.
We'll check on that. Let me just mention while you're looking that there was something pretty remarkable about this game in 1992, January the 1st. It finished 1-1. Forest goal coming in the 93rd minute from Des Walker.
Luton were looking good for yet another revival win until Des Walker burst through. This is his first senior goal in 313 attempts. Happy New Year goal, Des.
You'll never beat Des Walker.
Yeah, and he will never score. He had gone 313 games his entire career without scoring a goal. So he scored that goal. His manager, Brian Clough, didn't even see it because he left in disgust. He was so disappointed with his team performance, trailing 1-0 to Luton, that he went down the tunnel in the 89th minute, then learnt afterwards, Des told him in the bath, I hope it's the first time. And Des wasn't a man for many public utterances, but supposedly he told his manager in the bath after, I hope it's the first of many, but it wasn't, Benji.
Was it his only one?
Yeah, 658 games, one goal.
It's like Steve Potts. Sorry, Duncan and I were talking about Potts family pre-game. Duncan being
Freddie Potts super fan.
Yeah, exactly.
One goal wonders.
The other player that springs to mind when you think of this fixture is Kingsley Black. He played for both clubs.
Oh.
And just as I was idly thinking about Kingsley Black, I looked at his Wikipedia page and it's got classic Wikipedia apocryphal bit of information which says Black also has a holiday home in Mallorca where he co-owns a small charcuterie selling cured local meats and sausages. Now, if you search for that phrase, it's been repeated many, many times across, you know, social media. But there's no source for
it. No original source.
If anyone has been to Kingsley Black's charcuterie, wouldn't really be called a charcuterie in Mallorca, but please let us know.
Wow. Speaking of apocryphal stories from Wikipedia, I did enjoy the little vignette, Charlie, in your piece on Alejo Vélez
at
Spurs.
Yes.
Do you want to tell the story?
Well, yeah.
Is this true?
This is not apocryphal. I mean, this is from his coach at the time, from the reserve team at Rosario Central. And it was so well timed because Vélez made his Spurs debut in the Spurs Liverpool game, which is obviously VAR dominated. And so started the piece by saying, you know, you think that was a controversy. So Vélez, they were playing in a game, they were winning 2-1, and one of the opposition strikers broke through. Threw on goal, all defenders in his wake. And what Vélez did was whistled as if he was the ref. Did a very convincing whistle. The striker stops and is like, you know, what's going on? Centre-back's going at the ball. And it's revealed that there was the refs there like, well, I didn't do anything. And it was Vélez who had conjured up this amazing whistle. And as the coach takes up the story, says their coach lost it, protesting to the referee.
Right.
They missed out on the goal and we ended up winning 3-2.
That is a yellow card. You're not allowed to do that.
He was nowhere near the play, but he did something that helped us win a tough game. It was audacious. The Lanús coach wanted to kill him.
I can imagine.
I bet he did.
That is a yellow card. You're not allowed to, like, I think if you, like, shout...
Well, yeah, any interruption.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you shout at a player?
Defenders, attacker comes towards the defender. Defender goes, ah! Like,
yeah, that is a...
That's
yeah.
a card.
But Wickham got promoted to the championship through that method. So
what?
What,
a fake whistle?
No, the winning goal came from a penalty and the ball comes over the Oxford defenders and someone... Obviously, it was COVID time, so Wembley was pretty much empty. But someone shouted, leave it, and he
yeah,
left
exactly.
it.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, Banjo did that. Mm. Playing for Brescia against Juve.
There must have been an increase in it during
but
COVID.
But leave it in mind, you're also not allowed to say.
Are you not?
No, I have been pulled up on this
even
by,
to your
by
own
very.
Player?
You can't say it at all.
Ah.
It's off-putting. You have to say something like over or put
days.
A name on it.
What?
Can't even say leave it.
No. What if you change your name to leave it?
Well, we have had this discussion. Yeah, like
on that
that's,
other
my,
show.
That's my name.
Right.
But yeah.
Do you know that you can't splash a pedestrian with a puddle if you're in a car? You
yeah.
can be charged for assault.
I did know that, yeah.
What?
Yeah, if you drive past...
And this happened to me accidentally the other day as I was walking.
Well...
See you in court.
Yeah.
If you pass a pedestrian and you drive through a puddle and it splashes the pedestrian, you can be charged for assault.
Yellow card.
Who thought of that? Well, a gremlin.
What?
That's what gets them.
Right.
Hold on. Isn't that
just,
what makes them
you know,
into
with
the
rain, baddies? With the rain. Just bear that in mind.
This is when it happens.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, yeah. Are you suggesting the Gremlins want ultimately
yeah,
to be the big? They want to be the big evil version of themselves. Mm. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Brentford are taking on Burnley. Is it a relegation 6-pointer? Brentford are uncomfortably close to the bottom, aren't they? They are currently they're currently 3 points off the drop zone, but on a 6-match winless run, they haven't won at home since they beat Man City on the final day of last season. But they are taking on Burnley here. Let's see what happens.
They have had some really bad injuries. I do have a lot of sympathy with. Thomas Frank.
Yeah, they're missing Rea as well. I don't think Flecken has stepped up.
But they want. I mean, they brought Flecken in first. I mean, they were proactive about that. Mm. I mean, obviously
but he's
they
got
knew
the biggest
Rea.
Negative expected goals for a goalkeeper.
Right.
Well, on the XG table, obviously there aren't going to be any draws on that.
No. It's not done that simply. It is the matches are simulated based on the XG generated, so there can be draws on it.
But is it not just who had the higher XG?
No. It's if your XG was 5.3. And your XG was 1.1.
You then simulate
the
game
be, what,
many
5,
times. No. You then it's a simulated model as well. Anyway, I mean, I don't work for them anymore, so it's fine. But
anyway,
I just wondered how many dead heats
Charlie.
There have been XG.
There was one this season,
rare.
And I looked it up. I think there's like maybe 5 or 6 of the last 10 years.
Mm.
So,
Aston Villa are facing West Ham. Do you want to talk about West Ham, Benji? I heard you on the Athletics football podcast.
Moonlighting, yeah.
Discussing the kind of sell your best player, get better scenario that West Ham seem to find themselves in. It helps when you bring in the likes of James Ward-Prowse and potentially game-changing figures like Mohamed Kudus.
Yeah. I think you can argue that we're better without Declan Rice. And actually, one of the kind of like less obvious impacts is that by bringing in Edson Alvarez, we've got the renaissance of Thomas Suchek, because David Moyes is completely addicted to Thomas Suchek. He played like every minute of every game last year in Europe, domestically, cups, Czech Republic. And his form dipped because he was just exhausted. And because Declan Rice was bombing forward a lot more last year, Suchek was doing it on his own. Now he's got his mate Edson alongside him, and actually he's playing much better. He scored some goals. Actually, both are kind of our checkmates, Suchek and Soufal, are having really good seasons.
Assist king, Soufal.
Yeah, Soufal's got 4 in a row. Only 10 players.
Yeah.
Only 10 players have ever got 5 assists in a row in the Premier League. Soufal's got 4. He's also, I think, the defender that's made the most tackles in the league this year. So, yeah, they're kind of going under the radar, both of them, having great seasons.
You are currently 1 win off the top 4. You're heading to Villa Park this weekend. You haven't lost there in your last 5 visits. You won the last 3 visits to the Villains.
I don't think I knew that. Yeah, wicked. It's good, good.
Olympiakos on Thursday as
well. Yeah.
Away.
Yeah, in the early one. They're crap at the moment, though, I think.
But still,
now I've said that,
it'll be a cauldron, won't it?
Just a little aside on this game. Villa West Ham always reminds me of David Unsworth leaving West Ham to go to Villa and then realising, I don't want to live in Birmingham, I'm going to go back to Everton. the reason I mention it is because Unsworth turned 50 this week. He is now he's still the youngest player to play in a trophy winning game for Everton, but he's now in his 50s.
Huh.
Wow.
So.
Do you remember Joey Beecham?
Yep.
He did one of those as well. Went from Oxford to West Ham, decided he didn't like East London, and immediately left.
That was back in the day before there were tighter rules, you know, before transfer windows and how many moves you could do in a season. And you did get more of those sort of wacky moves.
I always find it funny when a player goes, like, either goes somewhere or leaves somewhere because they like it. Like, Craig Dawson left West Ham because he wanted to live in the Midlands. That was the driving force. Not money, not contracts. It was because he wanted to live in the Midlands. That's always, and obviously Joey Beecham did not want to live in East London. That's fine. I would have thought that enough kind of circumstances and money would make anyone kind of go anywhere, right? Apparently not.
Saudi Pro League suggests you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Newcastle taking on an unrelated note. Crystal Palace this weekend in a big Magpies-Eagles avian derby. they met three times last season. Every single one of those encounters finished?
Nil.
That's correct. Ooh, Newcastle have got a big game coming up after this as well. They are going to be hosting Dortmund. What a group that is. Dortmund have got 1 point so far. Haven't scored a goal. All right. And as previously mentioned, Monday the round concludes with table-topping Tottenham hosting Fulham. Table-topping Tottenham's boss is Ange Postecoglou, as you know. He's the manager of the month for September, which means he's won that gong 2 months in a row.
Two out of two.
And that means that he's already halfway to matching Jose Mourinho's career haul of Premier League Manager of the Month.
Joking, what? He got four in total?
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's how he felt, Benji.
Yeah.
That is a conspiracy, I'm sure of it. I'm with Jose on that one. That's mad.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with August. Less so September.
For Postecoglou, who would you have given it to?
Yeah, why September?
We won every game but one, which was a draw.
I'd probably give it Arteta.
Yeah? All right.
Beat City.
Yeah.
But that was in October.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Scratch that.
All right, yeah, I've changed my mind. Well done, Big Ange.
Very nice. All the talking points from this weekend will be coming up in Sunday night's Totally Football Show, which will be with you early Monday morning. But that's it for today. What a shame. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Benji and Charlie and Duncan. And Rachel and Charlie in the booth. And you, listener, with your ears. We'll miss them. But hopefully we'll see them again on Monday morning. Have a great weekend with them and your other bits. And from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.